All right, we are rolling on the post show.
Also, common people, you said, did you like this song or don't like this song?
I do like the song.
Yeah. I like the original better. I mean, I get...
I mean, the original's good. I don't know. I have a soft spot for Bill Shatner doing his goofy shit. And,
I mean, it's a good group of musicians, right? It's Joe Cocker doing the singing, and it's... And Ben Folds doing the producing. And hey, you know, I'm not a huge fan of Ben Folds, but he can produce the shit out of something. That's absolutely true.
There's there's a song.
And it's the lyrics are awesome. The lyrics are fantastic.
There's a song on the album. I think it's the one with Brad Paisley, the country singer. I think it's the one called Has Been, right? Can you cue that up real quick? We'll just kind of play it real low in the background. Actually, this time, hopefully the music works, right? It should.
Yeah.
First time in 3 weeks where the music's actually
working. Well, no, some of the music that came through my computer works. It was stuff that came on your computer.
Yeah, I thought it was working. We were hearing it in our headphones, but it wasn't making it back to the recording. Brad Paisley, William Shatner.
All right, let's see. Yeah, here we go.
This one... this is not the Brad Paisley one. This is good. That one's fine. That's Has Been. That's, you can play that one too, but I forget what the title of the Brad Paisley one is.
That's Me Trying. Together. Ideal Woman.
Let me find it here. Why don't you talk for a second?
All right. I actually hadn't heard this song before. I'm not a huge music guy anyway, but... I had just heard this song on a podcast I listened to, Who Charted, and I was pretty impressed with it. It was the William Shatner version I heard first, but then I went back and listened to the Pulp version, the original version. And the lyrics are great. The lyrics are about class, and you know, particularly in a society like in the UK where class is really stratified. You know, in Europe, class is much more stratified than it is here in America, or at least the lines are more noticeable, right? And the lyrics are, not to say that they aren't noticeable here in America, and particularly they're getting more and more noticeable, but they've been noticeable for hundreds of years in England and in places in Europe, so it's more along those lines. But I was really impressed by the lyrics. I like a song, you know, we've talked about this before. I understand vocals as just another instrument, but I also enjoy a song that has either lyrics that use cadence and rhythm,
right?
You know, like Pavement, where it's nonsense kind of, but the way in which it combines is great. Or if it's really interesting and good lyrics on its own, which these lyrics are.
So one correction, Common People is Joe Jackson, not Joe Cocker.
Okay.
And look for you know, maybe we'll get to the Brad Paisley one if we get there. I like that song, but I think you'll appreciate more, search for I Can't Get Behind That. It's William Shatner and Henry Rollins.
Why would I appreciate that more?
I don't know. I just think you'd appreciate the song as the way it's done. We'll just let it roll here in the background.
I'm not a huge Henry Rollins fan, so...
Well, maybe you won't like it. Maybe you like the country one better.
I don't buy the William Shatner mystique either. So that's why I never really listened to this album, because, there's that... This is bullshit. Okay.
All right. Sorry about that.
This is not like the song that is like that I like is that Suicidal Tendencies song, which is called it's Institutionalized.
Okay. I think I remember that song.
Here, I'll play it for you. Oops. Which I originally found on Beavis and Butthead, of course.
right. Yeah, that's okay. I think I know what song you're talking about.
This song I dig the hell out of. I think that this is, you know, this is that sort of talking thing, but it's got interesting story to it, and just develops, and even the music behind it is kind of interesting in this sort of crazy, unique way. It's just sort of this building thing, and he's just sort of talking in this interesting way about something that's happening in his life.
Okay, yeah. This song sucks.
And he was going like, ah, everybody going, oh, daddy doesn't love me. And then and this song's like, all I wanted was a Pepsi. All I wanted was a Pepsi. And he gets thrown into an institution because of, you know, him just being crazy. And he, but all he wanted all along, oh, he just wanted a Pepsi. And that strikes a chord with me in a weird way, because that's, it's very much about this sort of society closing in on you, and yet you trying to rebel against it. But where do you fit? If you rebel, then do you just turn into another different society? There's so many weird components to this question.
Right.
It's a wonderful and horrible question.
So that's a pretty good segue into Mike Judge. You want to talk about Silicon Valley?
I do want to talk about Silicon Valley, but I've other things that are along this line that I'd like to discuss too, so I don't know whether...
But it's a segue. How can we pass up the segue?
Okay, go ahead.
I don't want to derail you. I just thought...
No, we can get back to these issues.
So I watched the first
Hopefully this is a better post-show than 287, by the way.
I watched the first two episodes of Silicon Valley. The third one I couldn't download because of the DMCA. I got the fourth one, so I just needed the third one.
And start taking it off of my...
I will here in a second. I won't take my own copy. I enjoyed it. It's interesting.
The third episode is the most Mike Judgey of them. There are two sequences in the third episode that are very Mike Judge. And so, yeah. So I think what is Mike Judge? What do I mean by that? A combination of an interesting sort of observational take on society with a little bit of a whacked out sensibility.
Mm-hmm.
I like Mike Judge a lot. I think he's one of the premier satirists of the day, along with like Trey Parker, Matt Stone, Dan Harmon, those kind of people.
Right.
He's in that group to me.
Right. It's hard for me to watch Silicon Valley without comparing it to Betas, right? Because Betas was just on, you know, a couple months ago on Amazon, and it's startup finding funding, you know, that kind of thing. But it's only two episodes in. I can't really tell exactly how it's different, but you know, the characters are, you know, like the CEO of the two different companies are very different people. And there's some...
It's a younger cast, first of all. It's, I think, a better cast. The cast is great.
Betas has a younger cast than...
You think so?
Than Silicon Valley, yeah.
Okay, I never saw Beta. I know John Daly's in it. He's funny.
John Daly's the oldest guy on it, right? The rest of the other three in the company, the other four in the company, are much younger. So, like, comparing the Indian guy, like, you know...
Kumail Nanjiani is one of the funniest.
Oh, he's funny, yeah. But you know, he's a lot older than than the Indian guy on, you know. So,
but and Martin Starr is also in this. T.J. Miller, who T.J. Miller's great in this.
T.J. Miller, I always liked T.J. Miller, and the character he's playing on Silicon Valley, I dig a lot. He's just this hanger. He's a
wonderful douche.
Yeah.
Zach Woods, who you may remember as from The Office, but he's a fantastic improviser. He's on this. He's a UCB guy. These are all kind of UCB. Some of them are UCB guys. You know, Martin Starr, I've loved ever since. I didn't watch Freaks and Geeks, but Party Down, he was amazing. Mm-hmm. Party Down, yeah. And NTSFSD.
I mean, he was good in Freaks and Geeks too.
Yeah,
I watched.
Oh yeah,
Freaks
and sure. Geeks, I mean, he's great. But Thomas Middleditch is a great job in this. I I haven't seen this much potential from him in other stuff I've seen him in, but he's really, really good as a kind of awkward center.
Mm-hmm.
He plays it really well in a way that's both kind of understated and overstated. He manages to straddle that line really well, so I like that mm-hmm. a lot. He manages to play a very beta male that can still be a lead.
Right.
Which could be... You credit that to the show and the writing, but you also credit that to the actor.
Right.
Doing a great job. The guy who unfortunately died... What's his name? The Stephen Gregory? What's the guy who plays the really wealthy benefactor?
Oh, he died?
He died five episodes. He died after the fifth episode.
Oh,
yeah, it sucks because he was great, especially if you watch the third episode. It's amazing.
So he was the funder for...
Yeah.
The guy, the billionaire guy, right?
The one who's giving him... Not the one who runs Hooli, but the other.
Right, right, yeah. Okay. Yeah, he was like playing like a really autistic guy, right? Like, wouldn't look at him and very Asperger's, yeah. The guy that runs Hooli, I can't get past him from, the actor played, he was in Big Love, and he was like the son of the prophet guy, and he played just a really asshole character. And, it's really hard to get past, I'm sure a couple more episodes I'll forget about that part of it, right? But it was...
He's not in that, at least in the first four. I think he's only in the first two.
Okay.
I don't think he's in the next two that I remember.
Okay.
So, Christopher David Welch, I think that's the name of the guy who played... Yeah, and he unfortunately died because he's great. He's really funny mm-hmm. in his performance. I love the scene, I think it was in the first episode, where he drives away in that tiny car.
Single seat car, yeah.
That was so awesome.
Fucking billionaires.
But yeah, I like Silicon Valley.
The guy's like, that's a narrow car. And he's like, fucking billionaires.
I like Silicon Valley. I think it's only gotten better in these last two episodes. Mm-hmm. So I recommend that, although I think the third episode has been the best one.
There was a review on NPR, right? They're like trying to talk about they were criticizing Mike Judge because he's been out of tech for too long. He's a little dated in some of his references. Like when the first episode, when the guy is at the snack station and he's like, oh, the fucking programmers are coming, because he's a coder and not a programmer,
right.
That kind of thing. They brought up because I think it was confusing to part of the audience, like part of the audience, right? Because, this dude's a programmer. They're programmers. They're jock programmers, right?
Right.
I mean, that's kind of the stratification that they want to draw, right? You got take it back to high school. You got the nerds and the jocks.
I just thought, I don't know if I've ever noticed that because I've worked in large companies where mm-hmm. I don't know if I've ever noticed that kind of certification, but I think it's funny to bring a sort mm-hmm. of high school like stratification into that world.
I mean, that's what they did. The jocks still had programming chops. They weren't just jocks, but they were the jocks of the programming world, And it was weird. Yeah. Like they had who did they have on? The story, they interviewed someone I recognize name, some person in tech. Shit.
Hope it wasn't Dvorak.
No, it wasn't Dvorak. But anyways, they're just talking about how you have the coders, you have coders, programmers, and engineers, and how I don't,
the engineers would be more along the jock line.
Well, the engineers are the ones with the
not what I've noticed. The guys who maintain the equipment are the jockiest. What I've noticed, and the guys who write the code are the kind of dorkiest.
Okay, yeah. So, but by engineers they mean people.
But it may be difference of perspective, right? Well, you are sort of. You're not. I mean, I guess you're in the maintaining equipment line, but you don't fall into that.
Well, so what they mean by engineers is people with degrees, right? So, software engineers, right?
Oh, okay.
So you have to have a bachelor's in computer science to be a software engineer, where if you're just a home-taught programmer, you're I forget how they differentiate. Well, in this story, they were talking about the coders, which were the hacker geeks. Then there's the programmers, and I forget what qualified them. And then there were the engineers, which were the college educated ones, right? Huh. So I forget how they described programmers, but it's not important. I've lost interest in this conversation. I'm sure everyone else has. So let's get beyond that. I like I said, I like Silicon Valley, but I watched a whole season of Betas, and it's a very similar show. So I need to see more episodes of Silicon Valley. It's funny because when we were talking about Betas, and I was talking about the Indian guy, you thought you're like, oh, it's Kamil Nanjiani.
Yeah.
Like, no, it's not. I'm pretty sure it's not. And you're like, he's in that show. But no, you had heard he was going to be in Silicon Valley, so.
Okay.
When they were negotiating, you know, for shares of the company, talking about what they do, that scene was awesome, right? Where Martin Starr gets in and he's talking about how he's the security hacker guy, you know, and how here's what I do, motherfuckers.
Yeah.
And then Nanjiani gets in there and he's like, you know what he said? It's all bullshit. You know, that was really good. I like that scene a lot.
Brobdingnian comes from Gulliver's Travels, where Brobdingnian is the name given by Swift to a land where everything is of huge size. That's the etymology of that word.
I'm glad you remembered to look that up. That's fascinating. Thank you, Oscar Blues, for making us look up Brobdingnian.
I doubt I will remember to use that word in a sentence anytime soon. So.
Look at that cock. It's Brobdingnian. Magian.
It's probably something I'm not going to be using very often. Think of that what you will. Okay. So I've got a lot of different topics to talk about. Do you want to do Amazon Anonymous first?
Sure, let's do that. Let's pause and do some AA.
What did you pick, Jeff?
I'm going to go with product I own. And that is the Black & Decker LSG 300 12-inch lithium trimmer and edger 20-volt.
Home and garden.
This is almost the product I own. This one looks a little bit different, but it's the same battery. It's a chargeable battery string trimmer. I actually bought the kit that comes with the string trimmer, the leaf blower, and the hedge trimmer. Because it was like the way they priced it, it was the buy the kit was cheaper.
How are your hops grown, by the way? They grown?
Oh, shit. I probably needed to run strings today. I'll throw them tomorrow. Right. I trimmed back shoots. And I made pickled hop shoots last weekend. They weren't quite tall enough that I had to run strings last weekend. I bet you with all the rain we got this week, they're probably falling over. So I'll probably have to run strings tomorrow.
We should talk about that thing you found, by the way.
The thing I found?
The story, you got the answer to the question of the
we can talk about that.
All right. The show you found.
So I won't read the review on this one because I own it. I'll give you my own review. I bought the kit that comes with two batteries, two chargers, and then all the blower, trimmer, whacker things that I told you about. It works pretty good. Batteries take a long time to charge. The batteries take like 8 hours to charge. So you're going to keep them both charged, and you know, to do my whole fence line weed whacking, it takes more than a whole battery, but the things work great. I make sure I cycle the batteries. I have them labeled. So one and two, and make sure I don't wear one out.
Can you do it? I know it's battery powered, but can you do it with an extension cord?
No,
really?
No, just battery only. So if your batteries go dry, you can't weed whack, but it's just a weed whacker. And
isn't a weed whacker with an extension cord?
A lot cheaper, but carrying extension cords are a pain in the ass. The battery powered is really convenient.
Yeah.
And I used to have a hedge trimmer with an extension cord, and I can't tell you how many times I've cut the extension cord with the hedge trimmers. Really? So having a cordless hedge trimmer is quite nice.
It's hard to do it with a string one because that's...
Yeah, you're not going to cut the cord with the string trimmer.
Yeah.
But with the hedge clippers, no matter how careful you would be, you know, I had an extension cord with,
Did it spark a lot when you did it?
No, it just kind of stops. Not much sparking. And then you make the extension cord about 2 feet shorter. You just move, because I already had one of the plugs you put on yourself, right? Because I guess I cut it once, or I forget exactly why. But yeah, I probably shortened the thing by about 8 feet because I've trimmed into the cord that many times. So yeah, having the cordless hedge trimmer is very nice. The Black & Decker stuff, yeah. Before I bought it, I did checked a bunch of reviews to make sure the thing actually performed, and it works well.
I'm going to pick the Pure 2-stage water pitcher replacement filter, mostly because I thought it was a great friggin' deal. Somebody bought a 4-pack. And their price was $20.99.
It says list price is
$79.95. So they saved $58.96, 74%. That's pretty awesome. So, yeah, I mean, to save that much off a list price is awesome, period. So I think that's good. I like water filters, particularly for the kind of, we get really, at least in the city, it's very... what's the word I'm looking for? Carboniferous. It's got lots of calcium in it. So I like the water filters to
the 4-pack's a bonkers price. If you do pick the 10-pack, it's $100. So they're $10 a piece. The 4-pack's $5 a piece.
Yeah.
So the 4-pack's a sweet spot. The 8-pack is the same price as the 10-pack.
Some deal they got or something. They must have an overabundance of these.
Of the 4-packs, yeah.
So get them while they're hot.
Sweet spot if you got the Pure 2-stage water pitcher replacement or pitcher. Very cool. Right. You want to talk about that movie that I saw in elementary school? Yes. So we talked about this on the show before. And I mentioned to Greg thinking that it was part of our generation, and most people would know what it was. Watch this short movie in elementary school. And what I remember from the movie was there was these kids, and they're like, they were at school or something like that. And it was apparent they were in a place where it always rained, like all year. And the sun almost never came out. And this girl gets locked in a closet because of a bully. And the sun comes out. And all the kids go outside and play, and this girl's locked in a closet. And the flowers bloom and whatnot, and the girl's locked in the closet until it starts raining again. And it just made me feel so bad. You know, I still remember how bad I feel from watching that movie. Mm-hmm. And it's from a short story from Ray Bradbury called Summer in a Day. And when we talked about this before, I had looked online trying to find this movie, couldn't find it, whatnot. And the other day, because we've been getting rain all week, I felt like this movie again, right? So I'm like, I'm going to look it up, see if I can find the damn thing. And I Googled for it, and it found someone asking the same question. The biggest thing I changed in my search was, I said, a short movie from the 80s, you know, and that helped me find it. So in the Ray Bradbury story, I think the short story is a little bit different. Instead of being rain all the time, it is, they're on a colony on a planet where it's dark all the time. And there's this girl who gets locked in the closet. She gets made fun of because she's from Earth and she's seen the sun, and most of the kids have not seen the sun. Mm-hmm. And so the sun comes out briefly, and you know, she's locked in the closet. And then there's part of the story where the bully brings her flowers afterwards or something like that. But so that's the story. It's Summer in a Day from Ray Bradbury, and there's apparently, you know, I haven't looked to see who made the short movie or anything, but there's a short about it, and who knows, it might even be on YouTube.
That reminds me of something that I think that I wanted to bring up. I don't know whether we talked about this before. I know I've talked to some friends about it, but I don't know whether I talked about it on the show before. If you ever see a sunrise in a motion picture, you can tell whether the whoever was the cinematographer was lazy or not.
Okay.
Because if you think about the way, so the Earth is turning counterclockwise. Northern hemisphere. We are going to be experiencing So the sun is 93 million miles away. It's roughly a it's roughly going to be in the same spot for the entire duration of a day.
Mm-hmm.
As it turns, you will experience the sun over the horizon go up and to the right and then down and to the right. Right? But okay. You've seen, I'm sure, movies where the sun goes up and to the left as it's sunrise. That's because okay. People are filming a sunrise and then reversing it. Or yeah, sunset and then reversing it. So you can tell whether a cinematographer is lazy or not.
Huh. You would figure that a sunset backwards wouldn't look right because it doesn't have the same tones of color.
No, it really does have the same kind of tones and color.
Does it?
Film with color correction, you can do all types of stuff.
From my experience, sunsets don't look like sunrises. I mean, I've seen much fewer sunrises than sunsets, but I've seen them. Maybe that's just me not being observant enough. But that's
part of it, is that we don't see a lot of sunrises, so it's mm-hmm. hard to get an idea of those. But if you ever see the sun rise and go to the left, well, I guess on the southern hemisphere it will do that. But most films that
we're so you have to see where it's set, right?
Yeah. So if you ever, so when you see that, you can get an idea of whether they're really. I mean, lazy is questionable because it's easier, obviously, to film a sunset, and you can film a lot more of them and get the right one for your picture than getting up early, because sometimes you may get up early and the sunset doesn't have quite the same cinematic quality.
Yeah.
Whereas you can be like, you're normally out in the day and you can say, also, this is a good sunset to film.
If you want to film a sunrise over the ocean and you're in Hollywood, you might want to do the reverse instead of fly out to the East Coast to do a sunrise, right? If you want to film a sunrise over the ocean,
right? Yeah,
and you're in Hollywood.
Well, no, I'm sure you could find a spot to do it.
I don't
know. Isthmus or something where you could do it.
If over the ocean, I don't know. Maybe Baja, right? Maybe in California, Mexico.
There's got to be some way to do it. Go to an island or something.
You need a bay that's 12 miles wide so you don't see the shore on the other side, right?
Shouldn't be too hard to find.
Okay, so
get on a boat.
Okay, maybe you want the landscape too? Anyway.
Yeah. So anyway, just you can catch a lazy filmmaker if you do that. Okay. Songs that end a movie or a show and stick with you.
Songs that end a movie or show.
Like, I was thinking of, I just recently watched Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, the Gary Oldman version, and they end with Julio Iglesias singing La Mer, and it's really captivating.
Okay.
And I had that song stuck in my head for like a week or two, just because it was so perfect for what was going on, and it was like, wow! I just kept going through that in my head, and I never got sick of it. Mm-hmm. I remember Mad Men ended their last season with Both Sides Now, which I thought was just brilliant in the way it was used. And it stuck with me. So is there ever been something like that where you see something, a song is used in a way that it really just kind of sticks with you?
Yes, but I can't think of any examples right now, right? I mean, this has just been sprung on me. I'm trying to think, but can't think of anything in particular.
Okay. Think about it. Maybe we can talk about it another time. I'm house sitting right now.
Okay.
I am sitting for Damien's dog and cat. This is the longest I've been away from them for the past 3 days, actually. That's okay. They'll be fine. But they're doing nice. It's fun to do that for a little bit, and to they're kind of like little kids. So, you know, you're taking care of them for, but they're little kids who can kind of take care of themselves.
Right.
They're little 2 year olds who can do potty and stuff like that for themselves. You still sometimes have to separate them because Miss Kitty does not like Mystic, but they're both interesting creatures to be around for a while, so that's fun.
It's funny how they both have a miss sound at the beginning of their name.
Yeah, it is funny.
Miss Stick.
They're and you get, you know, when you hang around them, you really get the idea that these are conscious creatures.
Yeah, when you told me the other day that you weren't at home, I was wondering if you went down to your parents' house or something. I wasn't sure. I didn't put much thought into that you were going to be here like the next day. You know, I didn't consider that part of it. I just like, oh, Greg's not home. I wonder if he's in Maryland or Boston or something.
They're primitive. They communicate in primitive ways, but they have their own personality quirks. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Both of them, so
sure.
They're both very interesting, and it's fun to be around that for it, it's fun. I think the best part is you get to be around it for a little bit, and then you get to not have to worry about the constant stuff,
right?
So, you know, that's why, you know, I like to sometimes visit your kids.
Other times not,
that's for your benefit. I mean, I kind of think if it were up to me, I'd love to, you know, show up and talk to them for an hour, mm-hmm. but I know that I can gonna get them riled up. So I don't like to be here all the time.
Right.
I came, you know, the last 2 weeks I've been here. Well, you know, we were here with, I didn't expect, you know, them to be mm-hmm. up when Greg and Alex arrived, but they were. So, you know, they,
right.
I'm sure they were a little bit harder to put down. And then I got here early last week and they kind of got crazy, and I was like, all right, I'm going to give... I know that if I were in Jeff's position, I would want them to...
It's funny. Allison knows... Somehow she knows days of the week now. She knows that today was Saturday. Today was soccer day. Is Uncle Greg coming tonight? Because that means she can lay in my bed and watch a couple episodes of My Little Pony or something like that. You know, after bedtime. So she asked me a bunch of times today, and I have to answer non-committal. I have to say, I don't know. I'm not sure, because it's really up to Heather whether Heather's going to let her have that knowledge or whether Heather just wants her to go to bed. So, but you know, she knows to ask me, and she knows that Saturdays are the days we do the show now. So, I mean, if you asked her what day we do the show, I don't think she would verbalize Saturday. But she knows when it's Saturday. Knows the
stuff that happens in the day.
Yeah.
So if you ever want me to not, you know, to come up a little bit later, just send me a message. I won't take it personally.
Yeah. No, generally, like I've told you before, you know, if we don't want the kids to interact, you know, if we don't want the kids to get worked up because you're here, we'll head upstairs to this, you know, the second floor early. And, you know, so usually that's around 7:30 or so, like tonight. And, but, you know, sometimes you're here before 7. I mean, if you showed up at 7 tonight, it wouldn't have been a big deal, right? But, you know, since you weren't here and it was 7:30, it's like, okay, let's go upstairs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my plan was to arrive at 8. I think I arrived at 8 kind of on the dot,
oddly enough. Something like that. Yeah. I would say it's probably like 8:05, but it's close enough.
Yeah, within the mm-hmm. within order of magnitude, within a day. okay, so this was interesting. CNN had a story, and it may still be the main story. So let me check to see if it's still the main story.
Airplane crash?
No. Although there is an there is a weird, it's okay, so it's not the main story, but it was something that was the main story. It's still there on the side under the latest. Woman's gut feeling likely saved lives. Okay. So this struck me as interesting because of the implications. Okay. This is about somebody who the woman, this is, there was a possible massacre was averted. We've talked about the use of massacre before. But, yeah, it's an auto start. I hate those.
Hate CNN for that.
When this woman saw some kid going into a storage locker and decided to call the police. And they found bomb-making equipment and stuff like that in there. So this strikes a very interesting question. In today's world, you see this a lot. You see, if you see something, say something. There's this kind of message is being put out there by authorities. And when it works, it becomes a huge story on the news. What's the difference between when it works and when nothing shows up? And when people are bothered because of it, is there a privacy implication asking people to interfere with other people's privacy? And is that just something that is naturally going to happen in today's world?
I don't know. Should say, should put that one in the pre-show. Feel myself kind of swimming swimming around this one. I'm like, I don't know how to answer that one.
I can save it for the pre-show next week if you would like.
I might have not a better answer then either. I don't know. I hear what you're saying.
I find myself conflicted because, you know, when with all this NSA stuff and the Snowden stuff, in this, I find myself conflicted in the same way that I get why the NSA is doing this. I get why it's important. I also get why it's a privacy concern. But I'm also not sure whether privacy concerns matter that much anymore in the society we live in. I think it's something of a relic, in the same way that I think that a lot of these things that that people have trouble abandoning are relics, like people's aversion to homosexuality is a relic. And it's strongly felt in some people, but it's a relic of a time before we were as interconnected and before we had as much understanding as we do. Religion, both you and I agree, is something of a relic of the past. It's from a younger age when we didn't have the kind of explanations that we have now. And I think that it's always hard to drop those relics, but I think that this kind of, there's something to the idea that absolute privacy is something of a relic of the past. And we have to, as hard as it is, let some of that go.
I mean, so the best thing I can contribute right now is that I feel that there's a difference between personal privacy, as in being tracked with your EasyPass and what you're doing online, versus suspicious activity. Like when you're, I'm feeling this out, right? I know exactly what you're going to say as soon as I stop talking. Okay. So let me try to feel this out, but maybe I'll just let you, I'll have to wait till after you respond, right? But, you know, I'm thinking like the story here, dudes, you know, lurking around a storage locker, you know, and, you know, bringing bags of fertilizer into a storage locker, you know, or something like that. Well, you know,
I didn't actually read the story. Yeah. I don't know what she noticed or whether it was just somebody.
I don't know. But I mean, imagine someone acting suspicious around a storage locker. What's that mean? It's not some dude dropping off his pharmaceutical samples and his brochures at the storage locker.
This is the first line. Okay. When Shirlise, I can't pronounce her name. When Shirlise, Chelsea, Shellhass, wow, saw a tall young man slip into a storage locker and shut the door behind him one evening this week. It just looked wrong.
Well, it kind of does look wrong. I mean, if you're going to, like, quickly dip into a storage locker and close the garage door behind you, you're hiding something. I mean, the average person's not going to do that, right?
Yeah, I mean,
it's a privacy thing, but I mean,
if the guy was just being just cordial with people, then he would have escaped. So, I mean, then he would have escaped this person's notice.
Well, there's that. I mean, you probably never rented a storage locker. You probably don't hang around storage units. No. You know, I mean, generally, you know, I don't hang around a lot. But when we sold the townhouse, we put a bunch of shit into storage units. So the house would be clean and empty, right? And you know, and when we were doing some stuff at work, we put some boxes in a storage unit. And, you know, the people were there, they pull up, they open the door, they throw their shit in. You know, like, people use it for storing extra shit. People who are kind of mobile salespeople use it to store all their brochures and their samples and shit like that. Some people use it as, like, a small warehouse, so you'll see this truck for delivery, you know, like, I don't know, coffee truck, right? Coffee's a bad example because coffee's a fresh product. But, you know, they go and get their cleaning stuff and put it in the truck there, you know, that kind of thing. But closing yourself in the storage unit is not, that is suspicious to me. It's a suspicious thing. People don't close themselves into their storage units unless you're, if you're,
should you be allowed to do that? If you want to, what if you're just a private
you
person?
You can do that if you want to. If you want to be private, some people use storage units as garages, right? They might be working on a car, but generally they leave the door open. You know, it's not a secret thing. But some people like protecting privacy.
Well, so but here it
but,
is. Then
so okay, protecting privacy and avoiding suspicion are not the same thing.
Well, okay, so here's where I'm having trouble with it, because what if it was just a person who, like you on the internet, just wanted to protect their privacy.
Right.
And that's why they closed the door. I mean, you say you leave your door open, but that is the same thing as,
right,
to me, as on the internet, you know, being tracked by EasyPass or having your metadata tracked.
Right.
It's available.
Right. I'm not saying.
And that makes you less of a suspect.
Sure. Well, right. I mean, what I'm saying is, if you want to be a private person, you can close your door, but you're going to appear suspicious in that environment. Mm-hmm. So maybe you need to do other things to, either you're being private and not plotting a massacre, and in that case, you're being private, and if the cops ever come knocking, you can, they'll have a warrant and they can look at your shit and there's nothing wrong, right?
Would you still feel a major violation of privacy if that happened to you?
No, I don't think so. I mean,
seriously?
I'm trying to put myself, I mean, just because I know how, from or at least my gut feel of how the storage lockers, you know, how a storage locker community is.
No, I understand that, but you're talking about a community where generally things are open, and the internet is like that.
Yeah, but
and so you closing, trying to protect
closing
your
yourself,
data,
closing yourself in a storage locker is weird. So you need, if you want to be anonymous and not draw suspicion, you need to not act weird.
Encoding all your data, doing PGP and everything you do is weird.
Sure.
That would gather attention.
Right.
In the same way.
Right.
So is it okay for the government to then just get warrants to go inspect anybody who's using PGP for their stuff?
Well, they would need probable cause, right? Well, but what was the probable cause there? I don't know. You didn't read the story. You already said that.
Well, that's all this says.
But you said you just said you didn't read the story, so you don't know if there was probable cause.
All I know is
the headline is bullshit, but you don't know if the cops had probable cause. So you're no better than CNN right now.
All right, pause and let me read the story and let me see if there's anything there. All right. CNN is terrible. Just terrible. The report we watched was just sickening, disgusting, cloying, terrible reporting.
So the report mentioned no probable cause, right?
Yes.
They called the cops. The cops questioned the guy. They confiscated shit. Blah, 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 blah. That report, that is not proof of no probable cause, in my opinion, right?
The report is terrible. So
the report is terrible. So, there may not be a journalistic report of probable cause because that's going to be part of the prosecution of the guy.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, we're not going to know.
We're not, but based on... I mean, okay, so I don't know, but I'm making the assumption that this was, and this assumption may be wrong, but I'm making the assumption that this could have easily been overzealous people, police looking into something. And that, if this happened, that likely they look into a bunch of stuff. And so the question is, is that right or wrong? And how does that, that is the same thing that the NSA and other things are doing. And there is, in both situations, plenty of room for abuse. And in both situations, probably an equal chance of finding something negative, finding a signal amidst the noise.
I'm going to go back to what I said again, and maybe this doesn't answer, it probably doesn't answer your question directly, but in respect to this case.
If I could just for a second, it could be, like the police officer said, it was just God.
It could be God.
Okay, but go on. Sorry, I had to bring that up. That was just part of the thing that we both sort of rolled our eyes at.
If you want privacy, you need to, I don't know if I'm going to use anonymity in the correct term here, but you need to provide, you need to remain anonymous, right? You need to.
Yeah.
So you need to avoid suspicion. And when you're doing suspicious things in a public place, right? And technically a storage locker unit is not a public place, but there's people there who can see you. So when you're closing yourself inside a storage locker, there was one thing she said about taking 10 minutes to open the storage locker. I'm not sure what the fuck that meant. But anyway, when you close yourself inside this storage locker, if someone's there to observe you doing that, it's going to be suspicious. Right. So he should have taken more care to avoid that suspicion.
Now, if someone notices that everything you do is tunneling through a VPN, everything you do is...
I'm sure I hear you.
PGP or something. Is it reasonable for someone to say, look into this? Is there enough probable cause there? And again, we have a situation
So I think there's a different burden between cops showing up at a storage locker and cops trying to subpoena your PGP private key. Because with the storage locker, teenager, right, opens the door, lets him in, right? Because the cops are sounding friendly. You're not
going
to... So everything I know about search and seizure, I've learned on the movies and TV, right? Just like how everything you know about guns, you learned on movies and TV, right?
I shot a gun recently, thanks to you.
Right. But so let's go back to that. But you've seen on Law and Order or whatever show, right? That if the cops are invited in by the questioner and they see things, they don't need a warrant, right?
Well, we don't know. That is
not... No, that's not... not what stop. Happened here. Stop. That's not what I'm, where I'm going. I'm tying this into PGP.
Okay.
I'm comparing a storage locker to a PGP key. You can see... It seems much more reasonable where a person would invite a cop into a storage locker than a person saying, hey, here's my key.
If this teenager knows he has bombs in his storage locker and the cops come, he's not going to say, oh, yeah, guys.
Well, no, because it's social engineering by the police. I mean, the cops.
I think that's what happened. You think that the cops came up and the guy was like, oh, yeah. No, the cops searched his...
Humans want... So, I don't know about psychopaths. People want to be helpful. People want to be friendly.
You think that the police...
Will you stop and let me finish?
Go on.
I don't know about psychopaths. But, I mean, a major social engineering thing for companies and whatnot, right? Someone calls on the phone and is friendly, and the person that they're talking to wants to be helpful because we're social species and want to help other people, yes. Right? And if you can tell me, so that's how that is successful. Cops use the same kind of thing. Hey, let me in. We don't think that you're really the bad guy, but let's just talk for a little bit. And while... Now, this is, again, everything I know about this shit I learned in the movies, right? But, you know, the person invites them in. They see something out of whack over on the card table. And you know, that's their undoing. I don't think it's such a stretch that kind of tactic could have got them a glimpse officers or an invite.
Officers arrived at the storage park to find Ledoux among an assortment of gunpowder, pyrotechnic chemicals, ball bearings, and a pressure cooker. I don't think that somebody is going to just let somebody in just because the police say, please.
So, okay, you find me documentation where the police forced their way into the storage locker without a warrant.
I don't know. That I'm pretty sure they had a warrant. The question is, did they get the warrant under reasonable pretense?
Did they get a warrant? They didn't say a warrant. It sounds like the kid let them in. From the news report, from what you just read, nothing talked about a warrant. It talked about the kid maybe made a mistake. And
police got a search warrant at 10:30, arrived at Ledoux's home where he lived with his family.
Okay. Well, we're not going to know about the probable cause for the search warrant until it goes to court.
Well, that might have been afterward, because the teen's cash and storage locker contained just pieces of the puzzle. Police got a search warrant at 10:30, arrived at Ledoux's home.
Okay.
So
at that point, the teen fucked up and let the cops in.
Did he?
Or they're bad cops and they pushed their way in. I don't know, but that's not going to hold up in court, right? Whatever. I mean, everything I know, Everything I know, I learned on Law and Order. So
I know a little bit more about law than you do. Then I've done mock trial and those sorts of things.
Okay, so I'm just saying. We're not lawyers. We don't know for sure. We don't even know what happened in this story. It's a shitty CNN story. And there is not enough information available to know if the cops overreached.
I'm not saying there is. I'm saying this story represents an interesting dilemma.
Okay, so but let's go back. You were trying to tie it into internet security.
Yes.
And the kind of things where the cops are knocking on your storage unit and you open the door and they see suspicious things is very different from...
No, my analogy is...
So when the door's closed, it's a PGP encrypted message.
Yes.
Okay? And from the information we have, the cops... were able to obtain information.
I'm saying, don't take this specific case. Think of the generality here. Think of the general case in which. So what you're saying is that cops should be allowed to approach you and ask you for your PGP key.
No,
and if you give it to them, then
I'm drawing fault. Well, sure, they can ask you for whatever they want.
Right. Right. And you're saying that it, then if you give it to them, it's your fault. But other than that, they don't have any power to do anything. And I'm saying
they can get a subpoena to try to get.
They can get a subpoena, but.
But it,
without any information, without just information that you are using.
What I'm trying to say is
that you were being. I mean,
closing yourself into a security locker and using PGP for your email could be considered similarly suspicious.
Yes, exactly. That's my point.
And what I'm saying is, opening the door to your storage locker when a cop is standing there, and giving your private key to a cop, is completely different.
I don't think that there's any difference there, but I don't think that's what happened. I doubt that's what happened, but I don't know. But I let me go with the assumption that that's not what happened.
Okay, so how do you think the cops saw the suspicious items in the storage locker?
I think that the cops were probably forceful, and maybe they talked to the person who runs the storage unit and presented themselves as authority figures and asked the person to run the storage unit to open up the storage.
So then we got to look at the contract that the storage unit owner has with the tenants.
Mm-hmm. So the thing is,
so until we read that contract, we are really speculating bullshit.
Yeah, but
because the contract could easily be that I will unlock your storage unit anytime the cops come knocking.
Right.
And that could be something that he agreed to.
Yes.
That doesn't sound too far-fetched either to me.
But isn't that similar to when you use something like, something like Google Mail or something?
It's exactly like using Google Mail.
You're using a third-party service, and to expect them to absolutely keep your privacy in the face.
But no, you're twisting the argument. You went from PGP. To Google Mail and expecting the same level of privacy.
What I'm saying is,
No, you can't expect the same level of privacy. PGP is end-to-end encryption. It's only between you and the person you're sending messages to.
A lot of what people are concerned about is not just the fact that people are using... is not just the fact... is the idea that the government is able to ask Gmail for your stuff, even if it's not encrypted. Right, that's the real problem. That's what people are really complaining about: is that the government is able to get access to stuff that even people who don't know it's encrypted, don't use PGP, they think it's safe and secure. But if the government goes in, they can get access to it, and that's a lot. That's what people were.
Do people really think that? Do people even consider?
Yes, that's a huge problem. That's where all the problem came from. It wasn't from the outrage was not from people who had their stuff.
Which outrage?
The Snowden outrage.
No,
the,
that's different. That is not subpoenas for data. That is the NSA breaking into Google's infrastructure.
Yes, but...
That's completely different. That's outrageous. That the government's breaking into a corporate infrastructure to spy on the corporate infrastructure? That's outrageous. That is not spinning subpoenas for information.
They were monitoring internet backbone traffic.
They broke into the dark fiber that Google used.
In some cases, they actually worked with the company to get the information. I'm with you in the cases where they broke in. I'm with you in those cases where they broke in, and it was weirdly legal for them to break in. I'm with you. I agree. That's wrong. But there was still outrage over the places where companies cooperated with the NSA and just gave the information. There was still outrage on that. And that's what I think is the equivalent here.
Which examples are you talking about?
I think that was Yahoo did that. I know that there were some other places that cooperated directly. I think Verizon did that.
Well, Verizon gave them phone metadata.
Metadata, yeah. And there was still outrage over that. And it's the same thing.
There was not outrage. Verizon's not bankrupt. People didn't care.
No,
didn't change their bottom line at all.
No, well, outrage at this point for mega corporations, outrage doesn't matter. But
there was not outrage.
Yes, there is outrage.
There's not outrage for phone metadata.
There's not outrage for phone metadata. There's plenty of nonsense online that I read about how this was destroying freedom for everybody. So my question is it? My question is, and is, and if it is, does that, is that a relic of the past? Is that something that, that people are holding on to that is not useful anymore or doesn't serve the same purpose that it did before?
I don't think it's a relic of the past. I do think that it is not easy to maintain your privacy. I mean, you have to be as tech savvy as we are. And we can't maintain our privacy because we're public personalities on this podcast.
Right.
So
we kind of empty our souls to the world every
week. But we've just being public personalities on this podcast, we've elected to not have
very much
anonymity in the world.
Right. Although you have less than me because of your name.
So we just took a quick pause there. But I want to state one thing again that I feel very strongly about.
Yeah, go ahead.
And that is, I don't want to phrase it. It's the analogy of the storage locker being equivalent to encrypted emails. And I strongly disagree that the privacy of a storage locker is equivalent to a privacy of an encrypted email. Meaning that there could be the contract that you sign with a storage locker provider about law enforcement activities, right? You might not even own the door to the locker to keep it closed, right? So you need to look into that if you want your storage locker to be private from law enforcement.
Okay.
But also, there's the whole notion that I was trying to argue about the cops can ask to come in.
Yes. No, I agree. But here's the question. And I guess this could be a legal touch point. And it could be something that, depending on how this case works, it could be something that this kid has a way out.
Mm-hmm.
Right? What if the cops essentially... What if the agreement doesn't allow for the cops to come in without so-called probable cause, and yet the storage guy opened anyway? You know, what if that happened? Or what if it wasn't social engineering by the cops? I'm doing assumptions here. Well,
by social engineering, here's how I imagine.
I understand what you mean.
So the cops knock on the door.
Explain it, but I can understand what you mean.
We just want to talk to you.
Yeah.
We just want to see what, we just want to talk to you, right? They get inside, they see a pressure cooker.
Yeah.
There's probable cause.
Right.
Now let's take that over to the PGP email. The cops come to your house. There's no equivalent to, hey, let's just talk. Unlock your email for me.
Right, but right? there could be. Okay, so let's say there's.
But this. there's no. Let's just talk. You're not going to unlock your email for a cop without a subpoena.
Well, okay, so.
But there's more wiggle room for letting them see the shit that's in your house.
I understand, but let me give you this, and again, this is all sort of speculation and all sort of us making up scenarios. But let me give you this made up scenario. Not everything you do is necessarily PGP. You have a lot of stuff that you PGP, but there's some stuff that you don't PGP for whatever reason. Maybe maybe you forgot. Maybe you just you accidentally did it, whatever.
No one uses PGP, so you can't use it.
Right. So when you use the internet, period, there's in some way an implicit understanding that your data is insecure.
I mean,
there has to be.
For people of our tech savviness, yes. Yeah. For the average person, they don't even consider
it. No, they don't consider it. But for somebody who's using PGP for everything, what if there is something in some of their unencrypted stuff that a monitor, a little computer monitor, checks a checkbook and says, wait, here's some weird keywords, and says that's, and then somebody in the Justice Department says that's enough for probable cause and gets a warrant to go in.
You could, there's ways to do encryption and plausible deniability, right? So with PGP, it's not so straightforward. I can't tell you exactly how to do plausible deniability with PGP, but like TrueCrypt hard drive, right? There's been cases where that Brazilian guy, you know, had a hidden encrypted drive on a hard drive. There's no way to prove that it's there. So there's no way to compel the guy to give up his key. You know, that's one thing TrueCrypt lets you do with the hard drive is you can have a visible encrypted partition, which the cops will see is there, and then they have more leverage to compel you to unlock it. But there is also where you can put a encrypted drive inside of an encrypted drive, and they can see the first one, and they can compel you to unlock the first one. But there is no technical way to discover the second one unless you know how it was set. Like, you have to know how
you're getting into
it's a plausible deniability thing. And that's what let me just finish. It's just a plausible deniability thing. There is no technical way for the cops to know that that real encrypted data exists, and they can't force you to do it because they can't prove it's there.
That's beyond my example.
With PGP, there's not the same.
Well, but I'm saying, consider my example just for the sake of considering it. And I'm not saying that this is how things happen in real life. I'm saying consider my example and how would you respond to police going after somebody where they have stuff that's encrypted,
mm-hmm.
but they also had some unencrypted stuff that happened to tag the right things on some automated thing that was looking mm-hmm. at them.
Right.
And let's say the police then confiscated the information and compelled the guy and they found nothing. There was nothing terrorist. Were the police out of bounds to do that? Was the government out of bounds to do that?
I mean, the part of information I don't know is whether you can get probable cause for that, right? Whether that's enough juice to...
I guarantee that I guarantee you that the limits for probable cause are less for data on the internet than they are for real world for a storage locker. I would bet 99% confidence that whatever ridiculous Patriot Act laws out there makes it so much easier for people to subpoena or for the governments to jump in on data they find interesting versus physical stuff.
I mean, that's an argument for... it's the same kind of thing. If you only use PGP to encrypt your sensitive emails, your subversive emails, right? Then there's a target for which ones you need to decrypt.
Mm-hmm.
If you use PGP for everything, like if you use OTR chat for everything, then it's just what you do, right? There's not a target on any particular message.
But what right. I'm saying is that.
But I mean,
there are very few people who are that careful. And.
So are you saying because we use Adium and it has a little lock button for OTR chat that we're suspicious?
No, what I'm saying is there are very few people that are that careful about their data. And so there are two problems. One is that the people who are that careful are noticeable because they are being that careful. And the other problem is people who aren't being that careful may, just because of what they're doing, mm-hmm. flag some things anyway.
Yeah, I mean, part of the thing I love about OTR chat is that every message is encrypted, right? So if someone looks at our history between you and me, it's just what we do. It's not it's normal. So it's not like we only put our subversive messages in OTR chat.
And believe me, so much subversive stuff.
Yeah. They're all in OTR chat. So, and then hopefully someone with a brain is like, well, yeah, OTR chat's built in the Pigeon and Adium. They just click the lock, it's turned on.
Yeah.
They're not doing anything subversive. You know, that's kind of the goal, right? The ultimate goal would be to have PGP built into every email client. And it's just a button you click and all the emails in PGP. It's not like when you're using SSL to a website is going to point you out as subversive. Actually, right?
The best would be if there was RGP, but there isn't RGP. There's just PGP.
RGP?
There's just pretty good privacy, not really good privacy.
Oh. You could use GPG, GNU privacy tools there. So it doesn't say pretty good ever.
You get what I'm saying.
Right.
Yeah.
I had issue back with your whole Google privacy subpoena thing. I don't know if we can get back into that.
Yeah, go ahead.
I mean, you were arguing that people should expect absolute privacy when using a third-party cloud service.
No, I was arguing that people shouldn't.
Okay. Well, yes.
Yeah.
But you were also arguing that people expect it.
Yes, I believe they do.
Well, it's their own damn fault. No one reads the service agreements.
No, it's an assumption. It's the same
assumption
someone makes when renting a storage locker. That maybe deep in the fine print.
I mean, there's a good analogy, right? The owner of the storage locker unlocking the storage locker for the cops, and well, Google's probably better in this case, right? Because Google won't give up your data without a subpoena,
right?
Right. I could imagine many storage locker places don't require a subpoena or a warrant, right? Mm-hmm. I'm sure many storage lockers places have a clause in their contract saying, "Hey, if the cops ever want to look in your shit, I'm going to let them into your shit."
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't be surprised if that's there. Because the storage locker places don't want to fight the fight.
Right.
You
Absolutely
know?
Not.
So that's probably...
There's no benefit for a storage locker place to do that. There's no premium on that. And if there was, then it would be so monitored.
Well, that's it. So then there would be a different set of storage locker places. Right. The ones that protect your privacy.
Yeah. So there really is this interesting different sort of social dynamic on internet services than there is in storage lockers,
mm-hmm.
which has something to do with the base point, which is that the point that you were trying to make, which is that there is sort of a social dynamic around storage lockers that is somewhat different than the social dynamic on mm-hmm. internet services in terms of what is expected out of them. But I would still argue that there is there's the same tendency to not look through legalese when you agree to an iTunes mm-hmm. installation as there is when you sign something for a storage locker.
But if you're going to be doing illicit activities, you should read that shit. I mean, that's the point.
Well, now we get to... the point is not somebody doing illicit activities. The point is somebody who's not doing illicit activities. Right? I mean, that's the argument. The argument is not about allowing people to do illicit activities. The argument is people who are not doing illicit activities are they still subject to the same amount of search.
Well, it depends. I mean, like, it's... So you're agreeing to a service, and the service has rules, right? And until we read those contracts of a... I've rented two storage lockers in my life, one for work, one for personal. And yeah, I didn't read the fine print, so I don't know what the cops could have or could not have done.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care if the cops looked in either one of those. One just had empty cardboard boxes, and the other one just had a bunch of extra shit from my townhouse.
And so what I'm saying is I kind of feel the same way about my internet traffic.
Bunch of empty cardboard boxes?
I there's nothing interesting in my internet traffic. I don't care if the cops look at it or not.
There's a couple aspects of your internet traffic you would Like,
there's nothing BitTorrent traffic. Nothing that other people aren't doing like crazy. There's nothing there that I think is so I don't have a problem with that idea, but other people have a problem with the idea, even though there's nothing that they're doing. But you just said with your storage lockers, you didn't have a problem with the cops looking at it. So my question is, what's the difference?
I think it comes down to the bulk collection thing. It's too easy to scan everything on the internet. It takes more resources to look in storage lockers, right?
Well, yes. So, I mean, unless there were cameras installed in every storage locker, I don't know.
Well, yeah, that would cost a lot.
Not anymore.
It would still cost a lot.
It would cost something. It wouldn't be the same cost.
$100 a locker. You know how many lockers are in the country?
You can get easy webcams that are.
And then the network.
If you get in bulk and you do it, you need an easy network? No, you could do it pretty cheaply, I'm sure. The cost, it just baked into the infrastructure cost, it wouldn't be that expensive. And how would you know unless you read the fine print?
I think the webcams would probably get a public outcry. People don't like cameras.
But what if it would get a public outcry until it found the terrorist, right? And then everybody, and then CNN would be talking about how, hey,
well, sure,
this one person found it, and that's the thing is that. This is where it comes back to media, right? CNN is celebrating this. It's celebrating these people who saw this thing happen. How many times does somebody see something happen and there's nothing there? But in those instances where something happens, it becomes celebrated. It's the correlation versus, you know, it's the gambler's fallacy writ large.
Mm-hmm.
It's we got a match. Let's celebrate that match. Let's tell everybody how successful it is, and let's make everybody do it more and more and more. And that just builds and builds and builds. And what does that do to society? Is that bad or good?
If you want to be a private person, you have to work hard at it. I mean, that's what it comes down to, right?
Yes.
And there's ways they'll still do it. It's just not easy. It's not a right. Maybe that's what you were starting to talk about, right? I don't think privacy is a right. It's something you have to know how to do. And especially online, it takes
I think that's a very good point. And I think that is where I come down on it too, is that it's not a right. You should not expect privacy just simply because that's the way things work. This is that we don't live in that world anymore.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it takes a significant knowledge and technology to be private online. And it takes a significant amount of planning and forethought to be private in the real world to these days.
Yes.
So if you want to be private, a couple things. It's going to be hard. It's going to be a lot of work. It's going to take a lot of technical know-how. And you're going to give up a lot of convenience.
Absolutely.
A lot of features.
Is it worth it? That's an individual question, I suppose.
It depends. It's worth it when the government turns evil. Until then, no. Right?
How do you know when that happens?
I mean, I'm talking for
When you're immersed in something, it's hard to see the...
Yeah.
The outside.
I'm talking for an otherwise law-abiding individual, right? Or maybe even one who will turn revolutionary when the government goes bad. But, you know, you need to start being private way before that, you know? So if that contingency happens, you know, you're not already swept up with the rest of the... that's where I'm trying to find... I had a really great word.
What's coming in my mind is the idea of somebody who's doing everything private and yet is doing nothing wrong. And the cops come to him because he's doing everything private and they subpoena him and they give him a hard time. Mm-hmm. He's still doing nothing wrong. And he has a reason to be upset that the cops are hounding him. But at the same reason he doesn't, because he's doing everything super private, and so he's calling attention to himself by doing that. By separating himself out from the rest of the people.
I think that just proves that he wasn't private enough, if he's calling attention to himself.
I'm saying if everything that comes from a particular address is encrypted, then that's kind of calling attention to yourself.
No, that's why you got to use mobile hotspots and things like that, Wi-Fi, coffee shops. I just said it wasn't easy.
Yeah.
It takes significant knowledge. If you want to be a private person, it is not easy. It's hard work.
Yeah.
You can't get it at your home internet.
I don't think that there's a value to that anymore. I mean, I really don't. I think that... So this comes into some personal evaluation, but I don't think that there's much value in being private in today's society, at least to that extent. I think you gain so much more out of... Yes, letting some of your information be available,
mm-hmm.
that it's worth it. And this idea of complete privacy, this idea of...
Have you ever used Gmail? Of course it's worth giving up some of your privacy.
Yeah, and so this idea of, you know, log cabin on the hill, complete privacy, separate from, you know, everything, but I can make my own decisions about how much I... This is a vestige of an earlier time. This is a teenager outlook on an adult world. The society being a macrocosm of the life of a person.
Yeah, I mean it's convenience, right? I mean, sure. You don't want
to... It's not just convenience. It's
well, I mean,
it's the it I mean, society is not just about convenience. Society is about everything.
Sure. But I mean, the opposite of privacy is pretty close to convenience. I mean, sure, you don't want to be tracked, don't have a cell phone, right? But since there's no payphones anymore, that kind of sucks, right? You could always borrow
people's... You get a burner, right? You can get burners. Like
you get, hey, can I borrow your phone? I'm surprised there's not more of that. Like, people just like asking, hey, can I use your phone, make a quick call? Give you a buck. Give you $10. You can make a call on your phone.
People still bum smokes from people and borrow a Kleenex.
I'm surprised people don't bum calls more often.
Yeah. Everybody has a phone, so there's no point. That's the reason why. Everybody has a phone. So.
You could imagine where it could be more common where, like, hey, can I make a call on your phone? Hey, you know. Maybe because everyone has a phone, it's a little more weird. But because that could be a... That could definitely be
I've seen it happen when, like, my phone's dead. Can I use your phone? I've seen that happen.
Well, that could be the ruse, right? If you want to... Because phone calls are so cheap. It doesn't cost anyone on their mobile anymore, right?
There's no long distance anymore.
Yeah, you just ruse that your phone's dead, and you do your quick call. Send your coded message, you know, type thing on random phones. You don't even need a burner then.
But that takes... You have to know a lot of people. And if you know a lot of people, then you're not really being very private, are you?
Well, you could even ask... I mean, you could... So, I mean, this is
you,
like...
You can't
this
just ask somebody in a bar for a phone. That's not going to work.
Sure.
You have to know somebody.
You could set up gas station, right? You could put on a show. Oh, my phone's dead. I really need to call my wife.
But man, that requires so much more work. And I doubt that somebody privacy is going to be doing that.
I don't... Well...
Unless you're like...
I'm thinking more of
unless
the...
Unless you're a fucking spy.
I'm thinking
unless
more... Unless you're like really... I'm thinking more... I'm thinking more of the bad guys using this tactic, right?
But we don't... But the question is not about the bad guys. Because the bad guys are going to be bad guys. The question is about the good guys. Mm-hmm. It's just like gun control, right? The question is not about the bad guys. The question is about the good guys. Right.
Well, I mean... Okay, so the privacy nut, you know... Well, where I got to here was you don't want to carry a cell phone. There's no more pay phones to use.
Right.
You could come up with a pretty easy, convincing script in a convincing scenario to bum a call. Gas station, you could bum a call pretty easy, I would think.
By doing that, aren't you implicitly being antisocial and sort of being a little bit of a bad guy?
Not if you're not discussing
if you're lying, illicit if activities. You're lying about what you're doing, and you're lying, you know, you're making up stories to.
Yeah, I mean, but it's gonna be more effective than saying, "Hey, I'm a privacy freak. Can I make a call on your phone?" Well, people are gonna say no because they don't appreciate privacy freaks. So you just kind of lie a little bit and
so
say.
So what's the value in being a privacy freak?
You don't have to tell everyone you're a privacy freak. You just lie and say your phone's dead.
And all of a sudden, then you're being kind of antisocial.
Okay. I don't see why that's exclusive from being a privacy freak.
Well, I think they're one and the same.
Okay, and?
I think that that's wrong. Probably a negative in this world.
Well, then you don't make phone calls.
Yeah, that's the trick. I mean, if you want to get off the grid, get off the grid.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the only answer.
Right.
And I think to expect absolute privacy when you're not doing anything about it.
You could set up a bunch of burner Google accounts.
Yeah, and I mean, use you can Wi-Fi do that, but then I mean, then you're gonna look suspicious as all hell, and you should, if somebody ever notices. Even if you're doing nothing wrong.
If you're jumping Wi-Fi hotspots and setting up burner Google accounts, I'm not even sure Google would realize what's going on.
Oh, I'm probably not, but you're gonna make a mistake. No one's perfect. Yeah. You're gonna make a mistake at some point. So, I mean, at some point, your information is going to look odd to somebody. And if you're doing nothing wrong, but you're being completely private, then you're going to arouse suspicion. And if you arouse suspicion, you're going to get attention.
Mm-hmm.
And there are people who say that's a bad thing. That people that regardless, I don't agree with that. I think that if you're attracting attention, you're attracting attention one way or another.
Mm.
And that there's a certain amount of.
All right, whatever. I'm done with this. Okay. I mean, don't attract attention.
Good luck.
It's hard. I didn't say it was easy. But, you know, closing yourself in a storage locker, not a good way to start.
No. All right, let's end on this. Let's end on something different. So there's the Malaysian 370. Did you see the pseudoscience thing?
No.
Where there was some company, some Australian company that detected or said they detected a plane in the Bay of Bengal because they had some satellite that was able to detect signatures of metals under 680 feet of water from space. So ridiculous pseudoscience is as good as dousing. It was just nonsense, and it became a huge story for a while.
I missed it.
It was just pseudoscience, just absolute bullshit.
Okay.
It became a huge story because they were
because it's news on a mystery.
Yeah.
It's a development on a mystery.
So it's a great way for people who have bullshit to get their name out there. It reminds me of in the beginning of the story, there were stories about how some, I don't think it was ever official, but there were some people who were contacting Uri Geller and other psychics to see if they could find the plane. Remember that?
Mm-hmm. That was CNN, I think.
Yeah. So it's all CNN, of course. It's... Oh, God. It's
so what do you think about Colbert leaving the Colbert Report?
Good for him. Good for him.
I wonder what it's going to... I mean, I wonder what his character... I mean, it's probably going to be more Stephen Colbert than Stephen Colbert.
Yes, exactly, yeah.
But, like what he said, it's going to be some fat guy or something like that, but... I wonder what Stephen Colbert is, you know, compared to the pundit.
No, there are lots of places where he's interviewed, or you can see there's one thing where he interviews Neil deGrasse Tyson. Look for that on YouTube. He does it not in character. He does mm-hmm. it as himself, and he's just much more personal, much right. warmer and person. His character is his character. That must be tiring to do after 9 years anyway.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, Jon Stewart gets to be himself. Stephen right. Colbert has to be a character.
Right.
It's a fun character, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
But to be able to be yourself, do probably less work for more money in a higher profile job.
Yeah.
Good for him.
It's a big jump for sure. I mean, yeah. It's cool, you know. But yeah, it's definitely a different league from Colbert Report.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to miss that show. Having the Colbert Report there, even though I don't watch it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
There were things that they did that were just amazing.
Right.
Like their whole super PAC thing was I think some deserving of winning the Peabody. I mean, like mm-hmm. it was really brilliant, subversive stuff.
Right.
And it's sad to say that kind of thing is likely not to happen in, I would like to see them do something different with the late night talk show, because I'm bored with the format.
Yeah.
I don't watch any of them.
Do you think it will? Do you think?
No, I don't think so, because I think there's going to be much more network interference.
Mm-hmm.
Saying, oh, let's just do what everybody else does. You'll get enough ratings. I mean, I think that there will be some of Stephen Colbert, mm-hmm. but there's going to be a desk, and there's going to be, you know, he's going to have celebrity guests on to plug shit, and there's going to be musical guests. There's going to be an hour long stretch, you know, stretched out. There's going to be a monologue. There's going to be all those mm-hmm. bits of shit not it turning into something that's new and different. I would be really surprised if it was something new and different.
Yeah, me too. That's kind of a surprise. I'm like, oh, that seems like a waste for someone like Stephen Colbert, right? Just doing the numbers, you know, doing the late night show numbers, you know, just going through the paces, you know. I mean, that's what it really feels like. I mean, Conan O'Brien couldn't even break out of it, you know? So,
well, then he's been doing that kind of show for 10 years anyway.
Yeah.
If anybody's in a position to change it, it would have been someone like Seth Meyers, who didn't change it.
Mm-hmm.
It would have been someone like Jimmy Fallon 2 years ago. It would be Colbert, because you're starting a new show. You're in a position to change it. I doubt that will happen.
Yeah, and he's coming into the prime slot, not the late, late slot. Right. So
mm-hmm. So it's less of experimental. I mean, if he can set himself apart from the pack, though, that would be something worth having.
Mm-hmm.
It might not catch on right away, but in the same way that Letterman was a different sort of thing,
mm-hmm.
the original late night didn't catch on right away, but turned into something different.
Right.
A more casual version of the sort of Johnny Carson type thing. Even though it was still based on the template, it's hard to remove yourself completely from the template. But,
mm-hmm.
We've seen, you know, the shows that you and I like, you know, Community is still a sitcom, but it's removed itself far enough for it. You can see the outline of the template,
mm-hmm.
but it's not drawn within the lines.
Right.
Breaking Bad. It's The Sopranos. Drawn outside the lines, right? It's so that's the thing. You can. It's you evolve the form. Do you evolve the form, or do you just match it?
Right.
So what I'm hoping for is an evolution of the form. But the problem is that past being prologue, that's not likely to happen.
Yeah, I hear you. Did you watch John Oliver's show?
Yes,
it's good.
Yeah, it was good. It was kind of the same thing as The Daily Show,
mm-hmm.
but it was the first week, too.
Right.
I mean, it still has to find itself. It has to find its voice. The one episode is not enough to judge a show.
Right.
So, but it was certainly funny and engaging, but it wasn't that much different from being just the weekly show with John Oliver.
Mm-hmm.
But it was fun. I mean, it was funny. So right. It had that going for it. And it's a novel enough thing.
Right.
It's not something that's been around for 50 years. It's something that's been around for 10.
Yeah.
So.
Did being on HBO, did No Censors do anything in particular?
I mean, it allowed people to say fuck more often.
Right.
That's kind of it.
Okay. Nothing new. Nothing really noteworthy about it,
no,
though?
No. There weren't boobs. I don't think.
That'd be funny. The first.
That wasn't hardcore sex.
If it was my show, that'd be the first segment, you know, right after the you know, in slot two, it'd just be a stage full of chicks, topless chicks.
See, I would be different because I would have, first of all, full frontal nude chicks, but I would also have dicks.
Dicks.
Okay. I would. All right. I would spread the love. I would. Sure. I would say. You know, fuck it all. Show dicks too.
Good point.
It's
good
just skin.
But yeah, just get it over with, right? Like whole segment.
Yeah.
Here we go. The whole B slot, boobs and tits and dicks.
Gotta include the dicks, man. You can't just focus on boobs.
Bro, ding gagnian dicks.
All kinds. I would not just have beautiful people. I would have fat dudes and fat chicks. And
that there's a good one right there. Yeah.
I would have of all colors and types. Yeah. It's just look. I'm gonna take advantage of the format, but I'm gonna open it up.
Mm-hmm. I like that. Do it right in the B slot, and then like not again, never again.
Yeah.
Come on, John Oliver. You need us to write all your good ideas.
John Oliver, of course, listens to the post show, so he will get this. This was, I believe, a much better post show than the last one. I'm going to remember all of it. That's a very good sign.
We're not so slurry.
I think we had a very deep conversation. We had enough of a disagreement on that it made it really interesting, mm-hmm. I think. So
yeah.
I hope everybody enjoyed it, because I think this was great.
Greg's impossible to argue with. He can never win.
I'm not trying to win. I'm trying to have the conversation.
I'm trying to win. At least like when I have such a strong opinion as some of the things we talked about tonight, and I just like, I can't sway the asshole over there. Fuck you.
Well, no one's going to be swayed by a conversation. You're never going to have a conversation where somebody's going to drastically change their position on something
sure. In
that conversation. The point is not to try to win. The point is to try to get the other person's opinion and see what makes sense and what mm-hmm. doesn't, and just talk through the things. I get what you're saying. I hope you get what I'm saying, and I hope sure. that it adds to overall knowledge. I don't want to win. That may be a mistake that, you know, that people see by me being aggressive, because I am aggressive, means that they think that I want to win. That's not the case. I want to be aggressive because I want to know.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know what you think. I want to know what I think. And the more aggressive I am with you, the more it challenges me to figure out things.
We should end this before it's another 2-hour post show.
I don't know. I think it's good to keep it to keep the string going. But yeah, you're probably right.
We're in an hour 38 right now. So.
All right. We've wasted enough of your time then. Thank you for listening to I believe a much better post show with much more interesting stuff, and hopefully there'll be more of this rather than
singing to no background music. Oh boy. Yeah. Hey, like I said before we started recording, if this was easy, everyone would do it.
Just like,